Welcome to the Mindful Medicina Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show. Everybody, I hope your summer is going well. Today we have Dr. AJ Morris back with us for a third time. Today we will be talking about pH and baking soda. Yes, we're not going to be going into any alkaline food diet stuff, but we are going to really hit the conversation around baking soda. So yes, let's get into it as an introduction for you all in case this is new to you, and then we'll have this incredible episode for you to be engaged thoroughly with. And let's talk about pH. So the physiological pH of the human body is essential for many processes necessary to life, including oxygen delivery to tissues, correct protein structure, and innumerable biochemical reactions that rely on the normal pH to be in equilibrium and be complete. And so when I say that, what I'm referring to is your blood pH. That is tight. That has a very tiny range in which it can sit to keep you alive. So that being a pH of 7.35 to 7.45. So with that said, the pH, there's also a pH that can be measured through your saliva and also your urine. And because oral pH can swing throughout the day quite dramatically, in fact, it's not really great to measure pH in the oral cavity. It's better and more sustainable to measure the urine pH as a guideline, and that is actually what we're looking to alkaline, is the urine pH, which is systemic in its reflected as a systemic number, we'll say. So throughout this conversation, we're going to be mentioning getting a pH to a certain number, and we just want to clarify that we're not changing the blood pH. We're not changing salivary pH. What we're doing is measuring and shifting pH values in the urine. So we have two organ systems that manage pH in general, and we're talking about the blood here, but that's the renal system and the pulmonary systems. And so those are going to be tightly managed by those organs. So when we look to managing our pH, we will have more control over the urine pH. And so we are looking to get our pH of our urine to say around 8, because that has been shown to eradicate several, if not the majority, of disease states. So for example, cancer, or going as far as botulism, these different disease states require a certain pH number to be killed in. And so I think it's pretty clear that most people understand that being acidic is disease-causing. So today, we're going to go into the nitty-gritty on baking soda and how you can supplement with that to manage your urine pH in the hopes of managing disease states. And this information is not widely discussed. No surprise there. You know, we love to bring you things that are kind of, you know, out there, if you will, and not accessible, and just something to chew on. And we really love brainstorming with Dr. AJ Morris. He's a great teacher, and he's just a plethora of information. And anytime our brains come together, we just kind of have these aha epiphany moments. And so, yeah, we hope that this is an engaging conversation for you. And we're always looking to give you tools to self-manage and be empowered to doctor yourself. And So lean back, grab a cup of water, put some lemon in it, and enjoy this conversation. Thank you. Welcome back, Dr. AJ Morris. Hello. We are super excited to have our third conversation with you today. Today's topic is pH, and then we'll be talking a little bit about baking soda and how that can help with your health issues. Hello, AJ.
Well, hello, Dr. D. Very happy to be with you guys today. Really support what you're doing. You're on all the right tracks for America. Thank you.
That's super generous of you.
It takes
Thank
one
you.
To know one, eh?
That's hey. Right.
That was on track for Canada.
Oh, it was. I knew that. I didn't pick up the accent until afterwards.
Oh, man.
So we wanted to go into the topic of pH, and we know there's different pHs that are found in different parts of the body. Tell us how that you have this medical industrial complex that was created by the Rockefeller family, etc., creating these drugs and moving us away from nature cures, basically. And one of those things that we have leaned into for centuries is alkalinity and pH. And these are the things they don't want you to know about so that you continue to lean into their drugs, right? Which have a ton of additives and are very acidic to us and cancerous. How did you first discover this medicinal process involved with baking soda affecting the pH?
I grew up in Mountain View, Arkansas, and they have, I think, four Cherokee Indian colleges for herbal medicine up there. And every one of them used baking soda. And I started trying to find out, well, what in the world's big about the baking soda industry? Now, I became a specialist in the agriculture industry real quickly after I got involved in everything with American Cinnamon Corporation. American Cinnamon is the big corporation. It's the elephant in the room when all the drug companies come together. And so I stayed with them and yet went on to get some of this background knowledge that I didn't have any background from the Indian colleges on exactly what baking soda did. But I really quickly learned that baking soda has the ability to destroy almost every disease, and I think every disease. Baking soda has the ability to do that. Every time you get to talking about that around anybody in the medical industry, they all want you to know about the reasons that the medical industry cannot depend on baking soda for anything. Well, that's not really true. And so I had to dig out the industry and find out what we really had going. And I did that and found that very definitely the baking soda would give us these broad ranges of defense against diseases. And all of the baking soda is based on a pH of what happens inside the body after they give you the baking soda. And the pH of a teaspoon of baking soda is going to be in most bodies, and it's actually body size or weight is going to control. But the pH of a normal person's about 200 pounds or 150 pounds or something like that is going to be about a 8.0 pH. That is high enough to kill almost every disease out here. Now, the problem I ran into was that there are a bunch of diseases that you don't need to have that 8.0 pH. You can kill diseases with lower than 8.0. But the reason I was excited about the 8.0 was because you could go to it and it would destroy almost every one of the diseases out here.
Yeah, and the blood pH is managed very, very tightly by the lungs and the kidneys, because if you were to go outside of that normal blood pH of 7.35 yes. to 7.45, you would cease to exist in this form. Mm-hmm. And dropping below 6.9 puts you into a coma. So what happens is the lungs and the kidneys step in first to manage the blood pH. And if it gets really desperate and the lungs or the kidneys are not functioning, you end up having the bones as your last resort.
Right.
And you get that osteoporosis.
Right. And so there's a process called ammonia buffering that the body will go into and start actually pulling what you need. And yeah, the bones are kind of like your, when you start getting that pulled. But people, I think, are in that state for decades. And it's kind of deceptive, because people will go in for pH tests and they will be in that ammonia buffering state and it will look like their levels are fine. Mm-hmm. And it is not the case.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be what we call a cult or hidden. And the other thing to note is that outside of diet, which is what everyone thinks about first and foremost, as far as acidifying, there's stress. And I think that the neurotransmitters such as dopamine, norepinephrine, they continue to circulate through the blood, and this in a stress state or a PTSD state, and it lowers your blood pH consistently and throughout your life. So if you've had a very challenging childhood or abusive relationship, for example, for decades, then you're walking around with this compromised pH balance, and though your blood will always be 7.35 to 7.45, because the body will then shunt the effort over to the to the kidneys and the lungs, it's hidden, like Janelle says, that you look like you're okay when you check the blood pH, but actually if you check the salivary, mm-hmm. you can That's yield right. more information, because your blood is going to look normal, or mm-hmm. you wouldn't be here, or you'd be in a coma, right? 6.9 or less. So it's probably going to yield you more reliable results if you can look at the salivary pH. Mm-hmm. And your dentist, if they're good, they're looking at the pH of your mouth, and they can detect that you have stressors. And what happens when we have acidic saliva is that we start to have tooth decay. Mm-hmm. So you'll see in these disenfranchised groups of people, be it that they are low socioeconomic status or abusive relationships, traumatic childhoods, they will have a lot more tooth decay as their mouth is just continuously acidic. So having some pH strips in your house is a really good thing to check. I checked mine yesterday and my saliva was acidic. And, you know, that we could get into the long conversation of methylation issues where you have an MOA, monoamine oxidase and inhibitor issue. And then you're constantly having these fight flight neurotransmitters in your system. And you're just relaxing, having a cup of tea, but your nervous system is in fight flight, you know, even though you seem to be calm. Your pH is, salivary pH is going to be pretty acidic. So, yeah, so sorry to interject a little bit there. Dr. AJ, go ahead and continue what you were saying there. Yeah, it's just very fascinating.
What I did in my research, I divided up the medical world with the everything that was coming in from the vaccine industry. And I put the vaccine industry all in one group of charts. And then the rest of the diseases, the anthrax, the botulism poisons, the brucellosis, cancer, colds, cholera, pylori, H. pylori, histoplasmosis, malaria, pneumonia, polio, syphilis, and typhus. Now, all of those are able to be controlled at below 7.2. I say below 7.2, it looks like that the cancer can go up to a 7.6, and the brucellosis can go to 7.6. But all the rest of them are going to be below 7.2 or 7, or right at that, on the killing of the diseases. Now, that's the ones that we have taken shots for years, and that's what the medical industry jumps on, is those particular products. Now, polio is still unknown. They haven't ever finished any of the research on that. But when I get over into the pH product of the products that the medical industry has created, the AIDS, pH kills the AIDS virus. The Ebola is 8. The hepatitis A is 7.4. Hepatitis B, C, D, and E are all 7.4. The measles can go below 5 and above 10. The MRSA is 5 or dies between 8 and 12.5. But you see where there are a bunch of, and mumps dies at 7.4, smallpox at 5, SARS at 6 or above 8, below 6 or above 8. The swine flu comes in and dies below 5 or above 7. Now, these research results are the research that industry has published, and we definitely need a lot more research to be precise on where we're going, because a lot of the things that they have given us for the guidelines, we know are not quite right. So what we've tried to do, or what I've tried to do when I went out with just 1 teaspoon of baking soda and got an 8 pH, and I've used that for a long time. And I have a bunch of friends that also have used it for a long time. And we don't have any side effects, adverse effects, I should say, from the 7 or above that we get on AIDS. Ebola, that dies between 6 and 8. Those are the ranges that I came up with. But I looked at all the other ranges that they were promoting through industry. And all the big pharma companies have something going on with range testing. My thinking is that there's a larger unknown field of research here than we've ever got into. And I think that I think the range testing probably would be a good place to get into, because we don't have any idea what's going to happen when we raise the temperature of the room where we're doing the, where we're adding the pH, and or lower the temperature.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and of course there's nuance to this. Of course, you know, overdosing on baking soda is not safe, right?
I had actually a pointed question about that, and it came up when you said that you and your friends have been doing this for a long time. Because the stomach relies on a good amount of acid to digest, does putting baking soda into the stomach continuously compromise the ability for that hydrochloric acid to then, you know, really break things down so you can absorb minerals? Is there going to be a mineral loss over time? Is there going to be some digestive issues? Is my question.
Okay. And the answer that I have on doing the research on myself and my family and other people that that have been interested in this also, we found that there was not a negative result from it. We can go right to the 8 pH. And one of the things that we're discussing here is that the 8 pH is above, the baking soda of 1 teaspoon may take you above the 8. Well, it might, but we haven't found any places where it had overtaxed the stomach and caused the dangerous tissue problem that you're discussing.
And is now, it, would it be a timing thing as well? Like, you probably want to have it on, like, not around food. If your stomach needs to be like getting nice and acidic to break down food, you maybe want to do it on an empty stomach. Is there a timing thing?
The empty stomach is going to be 5.5 if it's been empty very long. And the 5.5 is going to shoot right to whatever the whatever they have done the research and found that the level of pH would be that would stop that disease right then.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid, I grew up with acid indigestion all my life and never knew anything was wrong with it. So when I was in the Navy and I had acid indigestion, I would just go take a little bit of baking soda and that would eliminate my acid indigestion immediately.
Yeah,
I didn't have any carryover.
Okay.
Of a too high a pH.
Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting study to see if it changes the pH of the gastric juice at all. And so I think what Janelle's suggesting is, like, you would probably want to take the baking soda away from food so that you're not introducing the hydroxyl groups, which is OH, hydroxyl groups. The baking soda, what it's doing is it's off this little biochemistry. So if you want to fall asleep, everyone. So when you, so you get this baking soda and it's offering you these hydroxyl groups, and that's what makes something more alkaline. Whereas acidity is a lot of hydrogen, right? So the baking soda is adding the hydroxyl groups, and that is basically creating a more buffered gut or more buffered alkaline gastric environment is what we're wondering and thinking is probably happening. So to take baking soda away from food so you can maintain your pH, ideally when you're eating, you want that to be very acidic, like 1.5 to 2 while you're eating. So AJ is saying, you know, the stomach when you're not eating is about a 5, right? So not going to be as problematic. You know, if you have little acid reflux before you go to bed, or you get acid reflux at night, like myself, then you're making sure that, you know, you want to take a little baking soda, maybe 1/4 teaspoon. We can get into doses later, but taking that before bed is one thing, so that you're not burning your esophagus, creating, you know, higher risk for esophageal cancer, etc. But that's probably a more benign time to take the baking soda in that case. But Yeah. So I think timing, going back to what Janelle was saying, I think timing would make a difference when it came to eating. So that's our little plug, being that we work and we work with a lot of gastrointestinal issues.
let me ask one question, because in all the research that I've done, I found that the ability to do the saliva test and the urine test always gives you a variation, a difference. Mm-hmm. The urine test is very reliable to give you what's happening inside your stomach and inside what's happening. And the saliva test does not give you that. It varies all over the board.
Yeah.
That was the experience that we were finding.
Yeah, I can see that if you're consuming food or what have you, the saliva is going to be different, and you have different microbiomes in your mouth, but you also have amylase, which is a digestive enzyme for carbohydrates, so then your mouth pH is going to be a little different. So there's so much nuance to pH, because people will walk around thinking, oh, my pH is 7.35 to 7.45. And it's like, well, that's just your blood. Now we get into the oral cavity is, I'll give you some ranges. The oral cavity is typically 6.6 to 7.5. When you're consuming food, you want your stomach to be 1.5 to 2. The duodenum, which is your small intestine, that comes right after the stomach, is 5.6 to 8. Small intestine, 7.2 to 7.5. And the colon, the most alkaline, 7.9 to 8.5. And so, there's a whole lot of nuance to pH. And, that's just a side note. What the focus of today is talking about, how can baking soda be used to mitigate disease states? And there's evidence to suggest that supplementing with baking soda is very healing. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Morris, so tell us, where did you get the numbers for these disease states, AIDS, Ebola, Hep A, botulism? And botulism, isn't that what they use Botox for? Botox?
It's a poison, and it's a dangerous food poison, and mm-hmm. it comes with you. You'll get it. You'll see it very often in tomato juices that are canned, mm-hmm. Because it's a combination of hitting. I think it's just the acid that caused the oxidation.
Okay.
But very definitely, botulism will occur in an acid environment if it's left there too long. And I don't know how long too long is, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But where does that research come from? The botulism came from a food safety authority in Ireland. That also gave us a food safety source for anthrax with USDA. The effects of heat, cleaning compounds, and chemical disinfectants, that all came through the USDA research. The brucellosis, melitinus, the Center of the Food Security and Public Health Institute for International Cooperation of Animal biologists, the www, and it gives all of their definite information. But they're all tied together. Everything that I could find that anybody had actually done research on, I published it in the book. There's a lot out there, got to be a lot out there that's not published. And there needs to be research done on a lot of it. And the place I would want to start on doing research, if I were doing it, I would start on the whole idea of what humidity and what temperature does the research sample have to remain in as you're doing the research on it. Because I'm suspicious that the The temperature and the pH, and both of the, and I mean the water, excuse me, and the in the environment, I'm satisfied that both of those are affected by probably the same thing, but we don't have any research that shows that.
Yeah.
If you get better research on this, I'll tell you, I'd sure like to have it, because I hate having something out here in the industry. Here's, for example, here's the MRSA patent. MRSA is an Eli Lilly patent, and the Phenogen, Staphylococcus, Indium, Indeter, or Epidemics, I'm sorry, FEMA, or FEM pro, A protein, I may not be reading these correctly, and vectors of microorganisms comprising the female of gender. Eli Lilly inventors William Ernest Alvin Jr. and Joanne Hoskins, Paul Luther, and there are several of them here that are listed that I'm not giving, but for no reason. It's just that these are research that are coming out of a good company, and I don't think that good company really means very much. We definitely MRSA should have never been turned loose on the in the hospital industry, and yet here we have it in almost every hospital across America, and we have people that die from this, from MRSA, something that should have never been a disease in a hospital, and we don't have a good way to get out of it, or I haven't found one. Oh no, there is a way out of it, and it has to do with far infrared medicine but there's nobody that has put any of that together. We started to put together a hyperbaric chamber system because it'll kill MRSA.
That's right. Oxygen.
That's right. Yep.
But again, that's contributing to what we talked about with alkalinity, is there's a donation of a hydroxyl group, which is O, oxygen, H, OH, right? So when you add that oxygen to hydrogen, that's what creates the alkalinity. A hydrogen without oxygen is acidic. So these hyperbaric oxygen chambers, ozone therapy, whether you do rectal suppositories, EBU, it's breathing, meditation, bringing in that oxygen is very alkaline, right? Just having a good breath practice, a breathing practice. Mm-hmm. So, so that oxygen in the hyperbaric chamber you're talking about, that's exactly what's happening there, adding that oxygen to the hydrogen. Mm-hmm.
That kills the MRSA.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, if we could get that into the hospitals in a reasonable or sensible way to get it in there, we had a company come to us at one time that wanted to do that, and they got married and moved off to another hospital. So.
Now they do have in the burn units. They have really high. Like functioning, like big, big shell, large hyperbaric oxygen chambers most burn units.
Yeah,
because they recognize that, you know, that will heal tissue very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because now what we're seeing, all three of us right now are kind of having an aha moment, is that baking soda is really beneficial in working because of its donation of oxygen, mm-hmm. right? So now we're going into, this is really about oxygen, and baking soda is a source of that.
Yeah. And I do want to say this. Some of you may remember, there's just this big obsession with green juices and celery juice and all these greens powders, and right. because of their alkalizing properties, but they also have a lot of oxalic acid. And, or am I saying that correctly? Oxalates?
Oxalic acid.
Right.
Which then has this super kind of a histamine response. So there's a lot of autoimmune stuff where people are really scrambling to get alkalized using those methods. And it is so good to have greens in your diet, but people are overdosing on these things. So the baking soda is a great prospect, I think, and as an alternative, you know, there's always a balance, but, you know.
Yeah. And then there's the issue of something that you're consuming that is acidic in and of itself doesn't mean it's acidifying to you. Like, good for point. Example, yeah. lemons, right?
Apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it can get tricky.
Well, you guys are getting into a lot of research that's really important, I think, in order to narrow this down and use pH as a better and stronger lethal product to extinguish diseases with. And from what I can tell, looking through all of this material that I got out of the industry, hey, I can sit down and read what everybody's done. The World Health Organization, and who wants them for government for research? Yeah. Government of Canada, they're about the same source. And Sachs George, George Sachs, Newman, Simon L. and Lisa, then the Nobel Prize of Physiology or Medicine, 1927, by Wagner in 1927. Yeah, that's when he did all of that research. But I think that we want to keep the people aware that there are certain medicines that they have control of inside their homes, and they don't have to have a doctor's prescription in order to know for sure that it's working. Mm-hmm. Okay, you may get a doctor's prescription that says it's not working, and that would be something that would have to have some attention. Dr. Smith up the hill up here from me, he's been using the baking soda, 1 teaspoon level and one he's used about 2 or 3 different things that go together with the baking soda. And he's been on it for years. And he's probably the oldest doctor we have around here. And I give a lot of credit and support to all of the stuff that he has done. Mm-hmm. And he's right with the 8.0 does destroy most diseases. Do you know what's in an antioxidant pill, an antioxidant that you get, Rolaids? Do you know what a Rolaid is? Do you know what the medical inside the Rolaid is?
No.
If you take a Rolaid, you let it just roll up in your mouth and until it's all dissolved, which we don't do, it turns into a whole bunch of little bitty prills. And those little bitty prills are the activation method of giving the baking soda, and I'm saying baking soda, but I probably should be using a different type of. A product in that, but that was stunning to me to discover that inside of Rolaid, what they've really done is they have created a pill that they can give to anybody universally, and it's slow and controlled release rate, and that gives them the ability to use it in regular medical systems. Mm-hmm. Now. If any of that is useful, I'm very happy to have that. But I am really, I'm hoping that you guys do some research and it comes out and brings out some of the things that I need to know, as well as the other medical industry people out here. Because we're pretty close to having something that's pretty universal.
Well, think about how cheap baking soda is and how ubiquitous it is for all sorts of things, including cleaning your teeth, keeping your mouth alkaline so you're not,
yes,
right, keeping acid, yes, all over your teeth. And everyone, yeah, who's doing all of the drinking kombucha, it's just like, God, you're just, mm-hmm, it's an acid bath. Mm-hmm. But you can make, the big pharma can make a lot more money by selling you something like a Tums for, yeah, your indigestion, et cetera. And that's calcium carbonate, whereas the baking soda is sodium bicarb. So you can charge a lot more, you know, including your Prilosex for your acid and your acid reflux. And the problem is, 95% or more of the time, acid reflux is caused by low stomach acid, yep, not by high. And so what happens is when the stomach acid gets too low, this causes the lower esophageal sphincter to be non-compliant, meaning imagine a valve, right? That's separating your stomach from your esophagus. This valve opens up to allow your food to go down. As the valve opens up into your stomach, it goes, holy crap, it's hot in here. Bink, I'm going to close these doors. I'm going to close the sphincters here because that was hot. That's what allows that lower esophageal sphincter to close tightly and stay compliant. If you have low stomach acid and after you're done swallowing food, it'll open up. The food will pass into the stomach and the valves will hang out in the stomach and stay open because it's like, that's just a nice tepid bath. We're going to stay open. You need the heat to cause that valve to close. So again, we want to bring that full circle and make sure that you're not taking any of these buffering components, be it, you know, baking soda, Tums, etc., and even worse, Prilosec, ugh, because these things actually will lower the stomach acid. Even worse, the big pharma creating all of those proton pump inhibitors. And ugh, they actually want your pancreas to stop, yeah, making acid. And we know that that's not compatible with life.
No.
It was meant to be used for 2 weeks to take down the symptomatic response you're having and also as a diagnostic tool.
God.
So your diagnostic, yeah, tool of saying, am I having a heart attack or is this acid reflux? Here, take this Prilosec. Mm-hmm. Oh, the pain is gone. Okay, it was just acid reflux. It wasn't meant for you to manage and use for the rest of your life.
I want to give props. This woman is an amazing teacher. I love the way you just described that. I feel like the misunderstanding of that process is one of the biggest scourges in people's digestive self-care life. Just the misunderstanding of like, it's hot, put the fire out. It's, yeah, like, no, that's rarely what's going on. So I thank you for explaining that so well to our listeners. And to me, it was lovely.
Yeah, it's like, you're welcome. Thank you, by the way. It's like going to a campfire and putting your hand in it. You're just like, oh my God, it's hot. Put it out. It's like, no. You need to stand back. It's supposed to be hot.
Mm-hmm. That's just stimulus response. It's all, mm-hmm, in line.
Yeah. It takes us back to what you're saying, Dr. Morris, all the way back to your origins and your work is that these drug companies are always coming along trying to create something to put your symptom out and suppressing our very, very cheap and affordable at-home products that have been used, you know, since grandma's time.
I don't think it's a sin to use the things that the people know locally that work in their lives. You know, if I hadn't used baking soda all my life or either Tums or Rolaids as I was growing up, I would have been eager to go and find something else. And then finally got in the military and they gave me something that would solve that problem, and I can take one pill in the morning and I don't take anything else before the day's out and I don't have acid indigestion anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that gets into the baking soda issues. What I would very much like to do is if you guys are doing research on any of this and you're putting pretty fundamental research into it, I would really like to get a copy of it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We're happy to share anything with you that we come across. I think this is definitely a topic that we don't hear a whole lot about. Although we do hear about the alkaline diet, for example, mm-hmm, which we see the Mediterranean diet defaults to that alkalinity. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but as far as utilizing baking soda, I haven't heard a whole lot about it until I met you. And that's why I was super excited to go into this, because people will try to manage their pH with the diet. But you get into this whole conversation around carnivores and vegans, and everybody's kind of arguing about what is more alkaline to do. What is the more alkaline diet to have? So some of the symptoms I just kind of wanted to mention, because some of you might be wondering, what are some of the symptoms of having too high of a acid content in our urine? And by the way, if you're on the fence of, should I check my saliva or my urine, the urine is more consistent and reliable and not so changeable, like Dr. Morris was saying, that the mouth can change. So check your urine, okay?
That's systemic.
It's going to be more consistent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's definitely the most reliable.
Right, right. Okay, so one of the things that I notice if I'm too acidic, besides I get asked, it's so funny. When I'm acidic, I feel my mouth is ready to decay out of my face. So this is like the first thing that shows up for me. But anyway, so we already talked about the dental components, but there's yeast, fungal overgrowth, your muscles, they're going to be achy and sore and stiff. And people will often mention, oh, that's lactic acid buildup. Yes, some of it, but some of it is also pyruvic acid. And I think that's the bigger one. The acid that actually is causing the soreness of muscles is pyruvic acid. I used to teach kinesiology at a college for adults learning to become fitness trainers. And so what we know about that is that burn and that horrible feeling you have after bodybuilding, it's pyruvic acid. And so that's more of a eustress. It's going to get, you're going to get rid of that, but consistent, like fibromyalgia and all of these chronic muscle pains, that's acidity. Okay. So tendency to get infections, inflammation, and we know inflammation's everywhere. Here's another one, mouth or stomach ulcers. You know how you'll get that canker sore inside of your mouth? That'll happen. Dry skin. You'll also get the cracks in the corners of your mouth. Another thing that causes that too is vitamin B deficiency. So you might want to check that if you're getting those little cracks on the sides of your mouth there. Energy's low. Fatigue is high. There's some mood changes. You can feel kind of bummed out and unmotivated when you're acidic. Really think about that. When you're acidic, you have a ton of hydrogen and not enough oxygen. Think about that.
Yeah.
I'm not breathing.
Yeah.
Right? So all your side effects from having this acidity level, you could just kind of look at it as, what if I'm not breathing? I don't have... So anything that would cause any of those symptoms, that's the same thing we're talking about, okay? So lower immune function, and we know that oxygen is so powerful for infections because any of your, bacteria, mold, fungus, all of that, they don't really survive very well in an oxygen-rich environment. So I think that's kind of that in a nutshell. I mean, you just want to look for these things. The nails can be thin and splitting. Again, that can be other nutrient deficiencies.
How about body odor?
Body odor. Ugh. You know, that's another one that you'll see when someone's hardcore carnivore. They just eat meat. So this is where you get the vegans and the carnivores arguing because, they'll say that carnivore diet is acidic. Everything has to be balanced. And so if you're just consuming meat, it's going to be acidifying, So that balance needs to be met. So it's the oxygen input here is really fascinating. As we come to a close here, I think I'm most fascinated with our the marriage between the baking soda as an oxygen donator.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Dr. Morris, about that?
I have an experience along the line that you're the way you're addressing that.
Mm-hmm.
And a marriage between it as an oxygen motivator. All of the baking soda that I've used or had friends use or whatever has been pretty commercially right along the teaspoon with a glass of water.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was my next question with the dosage. So, yeah, that's a general about a teaspoon with a glass of water.
Yeah, because that gives you right at an 8 pH. Once in a while, you can get higher than that. But if you most diseases, you don't need to go any higher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're right at a place where we have a simple task versus a continual monitoring task to see if you're on track with anything adverse.
So the message is just take the baking soda. You don't have to be like going crazy with all the strips and doing all this stuff. Is that what kind of?
That's what I, mm-hmm. that's what I
yeah.
tell people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have started many people out on the strips because nobody knows how to use the strips. And the first thing they do is they run in and they hear, oh, well, we can just lick the stick and that's good enough. Well, it's not good enough to have continual reliable testing. And if they want to keep a record of it, I keep a record of many things that I do. And it's good to have that record stay right with you because it's certainly a good guideline. And if you start having a problem of some sort, that record will show you immediately where you came in.
Yeah. Yeah, and if there's any opposition to trying the 1 teaspoon of baking soda daily,
yes.
then you can also use lemon or lime, right?
Absolutely, you can. Mm.
That'll also improve the alkalinity levels as well. And yeah, you had written a book and we talked about this in our last episode, resveratrol and wine. Wine is also alkalining. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
All the wine that lasts all through the winter is going to be alkalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be an acid. Mm-hmm.
So, and if you want to have a little bit in your legal age in this country is 21, in case you forgot.
Mm-hmm.
so if you want to cook the wine off, I'm sorry, the alcohol off of the wine, then you want to put that in a pan or a pot and you want to heat that to, I think it's 172. Yeah. 172 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
To boil off that alcohol. So, mm-hmm. yeah, or go to the Methodist church.
Right, the Methodist wine.
I thought that was right. But that's how they John D. Rockefeller funded all of that research that went into making Methodist church wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have any side effects on it
mm-hmm.
for alcohol.
Yeah.
But the alcohol is the ancient disease-controlling substance. It is at the top of the food pyramid of almost every nation out here, except the United States.
Right.
And those are important things if you're going to drink wine, and know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's there's some nefarious things going on. That's why we wanted to create this podcast so we can go down these rabbit holes and expose things that are right in front of us out in the open, right?
That's decentralized medicine. It's like it's right there for you. You don't have to pay anybody. You don't have to. There's no other mediation, you know?
Bless you guys.
Yeah.
That is certainly right on track.
Mm-hmm. So we hope that you guys found this conversation interesting. We certainly did. And if any of you are interested in learning more about these topics, always go to our website because we'll have links for you to study more, learn more. And then just one little bit of information I think is important to put in your back pocket as far as sweeteners go, because we know that sugar is extremely toxic. The best sweetener to use would be stevia as far as alkalinity goes. It was the only one that was alkalining. So just an FYI out there. Okay. And then just looking towards your Mediterranean diet and considering baking soda, and just breathe.
Have any of you ever raised stevia out of the garden?
I actually did. I have, and it was fun because I would make my smoothies and I would go out and I would have my little, my Vitamix pitcher in one hand, and I would pick the stevia little leaves
That's
and
cool.
put them in my smoothie, and then I would pick the dandelion. I was like, I just went out and there was like my salad yard, but my stevia little stevia plant was so sweet to put that in there.
Awesome.
Like literally sweet.
And that's so awesome.
Yeah. It is so sweet that you can't hardly take it.
Oh man. Yeah. A couple little leaves in that whole shake.
It doesn't have any of the normal sugar side effects.
That's right.
And the stevia's one seed of stevia is so overwhelming in the sweetness that I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yep.
Well, that... And the stevia bushes grow about 3 or 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to keep the cattle from getting them, by the way, I didn't find any deer got it.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
I was surprised by that.
Well, Dr. Morris, we're going to get going, and we want to say you are the most alkalining sweetener that we know. We appreciate you and your knowledge and these three conversations we've had with you. It's been a delight.
It's been an honor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your wisdom is so valuable. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Morris.
I appreciate working with you guys. We still have a world led by deliberate intention deceptions.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping we can stop that.
Yeah.
And you guys are right at the point of it.
Yeah, we're going to sort it out one talk at a time. Huh?
That's it. Just one conversation at a time.
Let's go.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.